Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Three Quarter Time Podcast. We've got T-Dub and Janus here. How are we, lads?
Oh, we're great.
Yes, very good.
Footy's back. How can you not be good?
Exactly. We've got an upgraded microphone.
Yep. Got a lot of feedback on that last week.
Only got two games. Oh, yes, your microphone.
Got a lot of feedback.
Back in the shed, cowboy.
It was poor.
But it's being addressed.
Oh yes, that's beautiful. Oh mate,
as the famous Janus, the senior Janus,
yes,
gave me the feedback. Janus, you sound senior. Like you're at the back of a shed.
That's just yes. Beautiful.
Shout out to Janus senior.
Janus senior, that's beautiful.
Well, lads, we had a opening round, two games. What it's a very interesting round. No footy on the Saturday.
Yeah,
it was quite turbulent, wasn't it?
We got a bit of a taste test this season to come.
I hated that. Yes. I'll be honest. Yeah. I know it was due to unfortunate circumstances, but it was like I felt like an addict. I got a taste, and then I had the itches all Saturday, just waiting for like the next game, and then I had to wait till Sunday afternoon. Yeah. Oh, it was so difficult.
Getting blue balled by the AFL.
Oh, bang! Yes.
A public holiday with nothing on it.
Yep, fair. Yes, it was due to some great. Definite unforeseen circumstances. Never had a game postponed by a cyclone before.
You never know what's going
to
happen.
It's probably a good thing because the Gabba is very prone to flooding.
Yep.
You get 3 milliliters of rain and it becomes a swimming pool.
Yep, that's a great call.
As we saw from that video where a bloke was swimming around. Did you say that, Tim?
Yeah. That's
like
the one from
around an oval.
Wait, was that at the Gabba?
Nah.
No, it wasn't.
This dude just swims around like an oval.
Yes. I mean, if you think about that, I mean, the test match at the Gabba, that had about 15 separate rain delays.
Yeah.
True.
I mean, it is in like a tropical climate. Kind of makes sense. Yeah. But
now on the topic of wet weather, buddy, we thought it'd be great to go into some. The worst weather games ever had on AFL games. Now, I've got two and Tim's got one.
Yep.
I'm going to open it up with Sydney versus Gold Coast.
Oh, bang.
In, when was it? 2016, round 11.
That's beautiful.
Ooh,
where there's definitely videos of this on YouTube. There was 200 mil of rain 24 hours before the game started and pretty much it was a mud bath. And they were just sliding around. It was playable, but it wasn't really footy
playable.
At that point. It was a pitch. It wasn't. It would have absolutely
mud wrestling at one point.
Yeah, exactly. Ice skating, we'll call it.
Just
zinging along the field.
Bit of like,
yeah, but was it really that? Was it that graceful? I argue it was a bit more of a slug match.
I think there's a bit of an art to knee sliding on the mud in football. It's just something special.
There's nothing better. There's nothing better than a knee slide on grass. That's like kind of thick, but not like, because if it's short, you still get like burns or you'll cut your knees on like rocks or something, like a stone that's just randomly on the grass. But if it's like footy long grass, well, the perfect time is like in between the footy and cricket seasons. Both those months, like September. This is for local footy ovals. Obviously not like the G, because I've only been on the G once when I was bloody walking around. Funny story about that. We went on the tour, like the MCC tour that you can do, and there was a Sheffield Shield game on, and we were in like grade 4, and me and my mates jumped on the field quickly. We just like ran and then hopped over the rope and hopped back.
Dang.
It was very funny.
Boundary rider.
Yes. But yeah. Like that time, I digress, that time between like September, October for local footy grounds and like, say, like March, April, the ground is just in like pristine condition because there's no sport being played on it and the grass is like optimal length. And then when it's wet, you can just slide. My best day at my local oval was in 2020, October, because there'd been no traffic due to COVID and it rained and I was running around kicking the footy. And I reckon I was there for 2 hours.
Knee slide heaven.
I was just sliding around, pretending I was bloody Sam Mitchell in the 2012 grand final diving over Nick Malcheski's boot, or trying to anyway, or what's his name? Was it Jason Blake who tried to smother Paul Chapman's goal? Like, just fully diving. It was great. What's your second game, Cookie?
Yeah, the second game is interesting. It is Geelong versus Fremantle in 2004 at Cadinia Park.
Ooh.
Now, this game's not really a wet weather one. It's more of a freezing.
Oh, bang.
I'm saying 6 degrees with an icy wind.
Oh, that's
cold. I'll tell you some stories from this game I've read online here. Firstly, Peter Riccardi decided to sit out the last quarter and have a spa because he was suffering from hypothermia.
Oh, bang.
That's one front for you.
Jeez.
I've got some Freo fans online who basically said local games were called off. People, like, what, players were getting taken to hospital from local games, but they still played. What happened was the fans were watching, and then at quarter time, apparently, I think he was down the end of the Freo, and there was no wind protection, and they were just getting absolutely destroyed. So what they did was they ushered all the fans into a glass occupied room with non-playing members of the Geelong squad and other Cat faithful, including Doug Wade and Corey Enright at the time, who was a fringe player.
Bang.
So there you go. So they watched the game in the box, pretty much.
With the team. What a way to meet your heroes.
That would have been down the new Selwood stand, because there never used to be a roof there.
Exactly. Yeah, and they just, apparently just absolutely copped it. And they just, apparently players were just having coffees and tea and stuff at halftime.
Would have the blankets over the knees.
That's another one for you. Exactly. Put the fingers in hot blankets. Water buckets.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, jeez.
You only know if you played local footy.
As a tennis coach, mate, I know a thing or two about it. I reckon the coldest morning I've had, I used to do morning coaching. I don't do it anymore, but I used to do morning coaching. I coached at a school that we operate at, and it was 2 degrees, 3 degrees in the morning.
Jeez, that's cold.
After being -2 that night. Keep in mind, this is in Melbourne, so we're pretty close to the sea. That's like rare cold. But if that was cold, my hands were frozen. I used to when I was a kid, I used to give stick to my coaches who used to wear gloves. Now, bro, oh jeez, I don't blame them. I don't wear gloves that much anymore, though. I used to wear them more. I don't anymore, because just disrupts the ability to feed the ball.
Gets in the way.
Gets in the way, yeah. Can't feed the ball properly. Mm. But yes, I've got the third and final game. We're back on the rain front. Honourable mention, I don't know if this is bad weather, but what about when it snowed in the Hawthorn Giants game?
I
wouldn't call that bad weather, though. I love the clip of Jeremy Cameron's shivering, and then the Hawthorn player next to him is looking up, just going, "Oh, wow, that's so cool." But now my game is.
I mean, have you seen that?
Sorry, Janice, you go.
Have you seen that video? Have you seen that video of Clarko? He took his shirt off and he started running around the field.
Running around in the nud.
Boys, it's not that cold.
That's beautiful.
It's not that cold, boys.
Mind games. Like teed up in the goal kicking battle just recently. had to plug myself there. But anyway, I'll get back to it. My game was going to be postponed, but it wasn't. It was round 1, 2018. Gold Coast played North Melbourne in Cairns because of the Commonwealth Games, I believe. Anyway. There was 30 mils of rain in the first quarter.
Bang.
There was 30 mils of rain. It rained the whole game. And pockets of the ground were just puddles. And it was torrential.
Yeah.
And of course, in Cairns, right, it's portable. So it's portable camera stands and stuff. Some of the cameras couldn't even see the game. That's how much rain it was.
Yeah.
The main broadcast ones, the side view and a couple of behind the goals ones, were properly looked after, so you had a decent. But some of the ones on ground level, almost the POV ones of the fans, you couldn't see anything because it was just that bad. I'll tell you what else was bad. What the bloody... The marketing departments of Fox and Seven, what has gone on over summer? What's going on? Particularly at Foxtel. Seven is... I'll swallow it. I'll cop it. Sevens is all right. Like, to a point. It's bearable. It's not horrific. But well, Fox, on the other hand, what is going on? Janus, what is going on at Foxtel?
I mean, it looks like an NFL scoreboard, doesn't it?
Bang.
And every 5 minutes or after every goal, guess what we see? We don't see who's kicked the goal. We see the commentators.
Yeah.
They come up with a little picture of a commentator. I saw Matt Hill probably 5 times throughout the course of the game yesterday. Yes. I didn't need to see him.
I saw him 35 funny.
Times. Yes, I know Dermot Brereton is commentating on the game. I don't need to be told after every goal.
We can hear him.
If you look close enough at the game, if you look hard enough, you'll see the game behind the scoreboard.
Yes, it's a great call.
That is great.
The things with the seven scoreboard, I saw something, mate. Because it's obviously in the center of the screen, which does seem a bit weird. But it probably helps the social media clips and stuff. You can see the scoreboard.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I've not thought about that. That's a good point.
Unlike an Instagram post or something.
It's a great point.
You can see the scoreboard in the middle. So, yeah. I mean,
that's a very good point. Because it's
with the Foxtel one, I mean, what the hell is going on there? It literally takes up a third of the screen.
I saw someone say the Foxtel one's better if you're at a pub or something.
You can see it.
Which I understand.
I get that.
It's sort of a throwback to that like 06 scoreboard where it was like the sort of grey one. I think like Eddie Betts kicked his first goal with that sort of scoreboard.
Yeah.
But it's still abnormally large.
It's ridiculous. Like no sport in the world has a scoreboard graphic that big.
No,
I haven't thought about the social media aspect. That makes sense, Janus. That's a good point, actually. But like, Seven is just an American scoreboard. Seven is like it's the AFL clearly trying to grow the game overseas. Because like, you look at the NBA, you look at the NFL, they have like the scoreboard in the middle a lot of the time, down the bottom.
Yeah.
So that they're obviously trying to tap into the American market, but sports like, and even cricket as well. That's what the Foxtel scoreboard is, to be honest. It's a cricket scoreboard.
Cricket. Yeah, that's such a good call.
It's a cricket scoreboard.
What I noticed, I mean, at the halftime score or the quarter time score, the Foxtel, they had like a little box at the top right, and that was perfect. It was out of the way. You could see what it was. You could see with the teams. And it was, you know, it wasn't egregious. This bottom scoreboard, it's egregious.
Just make the font bigger.
Yep.
We love it.
Of like the, I don't know, it wasn't, someone I just needs
I thought,
a bloody.
I thought the one from last season was really good. Like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not used to a change this big as well. People struggle with change, like generally. Like,
I'll get used to it. We'll get used to it.
Yeah, we will. But like you look at every scoreboard change throughout history, it's like it's slight, it's minimal. This is just bang. This is just boom. This is just like
it's a big change.
It's a big, big change.
And it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, but so does every scoreboard change. But still.
Yeah.
Did the Hawks win come out of nowhere,
the
games
at hand.
Did the Hawks win come out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Were you expecting it is the big question.
I tipped them. But was I expecting... I wasn't expecting that maturity. I'll tell you what. When Sydney were coming back, we saw it that many times last year. And they would just kill teams and win by 4 goals. And I was like, when Nick Blakey dobbed that one from 50, I was like, well, honestly, we've played pretty well. But we're in trouble now.
Yeah.
Respectfully, we're in trouble.
Especially in that third quarter where Blakey was breaking lines. Warner was breaking lines.
Taking the piss.
They played with a lot more drive. They were going up the middle of the ground. They were playing with speed. But your back line, Barras, Battle, Sicily played really well. Scrimshaw, little shout out to Scrimshaw. They stood up. And yeah, they Scrimshaw absorbed all that good. Pressure. And when because Sydney, they were down by what, 4 goals or something. They kicked a few in a row, but Nash got a goal back. They halted that momentum.
Yeah, that was a big kick.
That was a big, big goal. Talk about clutch momentum goals. That's a big goal.
Well done, Connor Nash.
Anyway, it was a great win. But one thing we wanted to talk about was Sammy Mitchell's body language.
Yes.
Now, Sammy Mitchell is a pretty confident bloke, I would say. He always has been.
Cue the needle clip against the Bombers.
The needle, the bang.
Exactly. He's not afraid. Let's say that.
He believes in himself.
We saw him pre-game. Exactly. He believes in himself, believes in his team. But when we saw him pre-game, I was like, oh, geez, he's feeling it. Because he was taking like a leaf. Jordan Lewis described him as boring. He's not usually Sammy Mitchell. So you could tell he was feeling... You could tell he felt the weight of the game because he knew that if Hawthorn get blown out here, we're about to... It could be a long year. Could be a long year. But that was very interesting. And yeah, we'll see what he's like next week against the Dons. I don't know. See what happens. But it's a watch. It's definitely
with
a watch.
With that cookie, especially in the midst of the release of that documentary, that Full Sweat documentary, Hawthorn all of a sudden have a massive weight of media expectation. A massive weight. You know, they got a full hour-long documentary after losing a semi-final. So now all the punters are getting on top of them. You know, their preseason has been promoted to the rest of the league. And to be honest, watching that documentary, I didn't think it put a particularly sensational light on the Hawthorn preseason. There was a lot more. Sam Mitchell had a lot more criticism of his players than I thought he had of. Like an encouragement. Like there was a big motif of driving the standards. They weren't driving the standards. They weren't looking at the details. They weren't taking it seriously. But all of a sudden, there's so much more expectation, and they've come off a pretty poor loss against the Dogs in the preseason. So you can tell that he wants them to do well, and he's feeling the expectation.
Just on that is 100% translated into their mannerisms on the field.
Their playing style. 100%.
For now. Like they've gone from this what were they called? The Hollywood Hawks. Hawkball. Like they definitely were like I saw no brash, outrageous celebrations. I saw McDonald, I feel That's like, cool. tried to get one going when he got his cheapie. But then I think if the thought went through his brain, hang on a minute, it's the only kick I've had all game.
Yeah.
But as a Hawthorn supporter, Cookie, do you feel they were definitely more, what's the word?
I do, definitely. It's going to be very interesting to see what's going to happen. Over the next month, we've got Essendon come. We've got Collingwood and Gather Round. And if you want to pull out a Selly and Geelong Easter Monday, those are the four games to pull out the Selly because there's going to be a heap of people watching.
Yeah.
So, look, probably give them a week and they'll probably start doing just completely rogue celebrations. But honestly, you can't be celebrating when you can lose, especially against Sydney finished first last year. You can't be taking the piss. It's the Swans. Yeah. But I liked it. It's definitely good. Don't get me wrong. They will. When Guinea gets up and about, they're going to start acting like idiots. But you know what? As they should. But Guinea didn't get near it. So.
The thing is, I thought in that game they found a good middle ground between sort of playing that sort of flamboyant style. They still move the ball quite fast. They use their creative players like Scrimshaw to move the ball quite fast. Will Day took the piss. Meek took the piss. James Warple was very instrumental with clearances and stuff, and especially in the first half. So they know how to move the ball well. And so that's that sort of flamboyance. But they were mature. They were mature out the back. They didn't overplay. You know, there was no post-match celebration.
There was no selfie.
So post-match selfie. So I thought in the game they were far more stoic and far more mature in how they went about it, which I, to be honest, I liked.
That could also
I hate seeing when they're up and about.
That could also be because the game was very sloppy, and you're going to get that in like a game, like a first month of the year game, especially in Sydney where it'll be fast track, wet as well. Those sorts of games suit Hawthorn to a T, sloppy games, because the skill level of the Hawks is generally higher than the opposition. Like, how many teams would you say have better skills than Hawthorn? Not decision making, like skills. There's not many teams out there. Like Hawthorn, I would say are the top four.
What do you think about the Swans teed up? What about
Swans,
from their side?
I thought their midfield was subpar for a team of that much talent. I know Warner was good. Heaney was patchy. But, I mean, the Hawks were just so dominant. Like, plus 14 at clearance. James Warple was running amok. He was exiting the front of stoppage so much. And Day in forward line and centre bounce was also very good. Meek was good for the game, but I would say Grundy was okay, but that was a great battle.
I feel like
it was a great contest.
Yeah, I feel like he settled into the game, Grundy. Meek dominated early, but Grundy clawed his way back into it. So I thought towards the back half of the game, I don't think he was that bad.
Yeah, but then on the front, like the end of the offensive dominance, I feel like the Hawks mids really defended the ground well. Like Sydney, besides that like 10-minute third quarter momentum burst, which every team's going to have their time in the sun, they just defended the ground so well for 3.5 quarters. Like they were so, so, so good. Like Sydney were just turning it over through the middle of the ground when they went wide, when they switched it. Hawthorn just defended the ground really well. But that also comes off the back of their half back and full back line. Like, I think, don't quote me on this stat. This is based on my own very limited research. Hawthorn won the intercept mark count like 21-6 or something. Like, it might have been a bit. Yeah, Sydney might have had a few more, but Hawthorn was. It was like plus 13-15 in favor of the Hawks. Like, you are. That is a lot of intercept marks. And a lot of them came from Barras, Sicily, and Scrimshaw. Scrimshaw definitely the underrated. Just on Sicily. How is that mark near the end, on the 50?
In the hole.
Seven deep in the pack.
Oh, yeah.
Stuck the mitts up and just hung onto it. That was such a good grab.
He finds a way, the old sis.
And then even his second mark in the hole in the wet at the front of the top of the goal square.
At his knees.
That was a big
mark. He gave it to Finn McGuinness and it gave me a literal heart attack.
It's like when Owies handballed it to himself in the square in that final. Oh, my word. I nearly died that day. But
on that intercept marking sort of dominance that Hawthorn had, I thought they intercept marked and they rebounded so well. They rebounded quickly off the intercept marks. And I do want to make a note of a particular play that really caught my eye. When Scrimshaw used his left foot, he pierced the ball through two defenders, through two Sydney players in the middle of the ground, finds Cam McKenzie, and that sets up Will Day's soccer goal in the first quarter. I thought that was very, very characteristic of Hawthorn that game.
Brave ball movement. Cookie, what are your thoughts on
about
Sydney?
About the Giants.
What are your thoughts on Sydney, Cookie?
Sydney.
Just quickly before we move forward.
I think their forward line did not look good.
Yeah, their connection
looked
average.
Our back line looked good, but still, it didn't, like, apart from, like, a couple free kicks to Amati or something, I don't know, like, Papley got going early. Yeah, I don't know. Sydney's forward line is a worry. They put McCartan forward. Like, is that the answer? I don't know.
It's the answer if you can replace
him. Up the ground well, but like, did he have much impact? Probably not.
It's not a natural
Heaney
forward.
Couldn't get going either. But I think we'll see what they have against Brisbane next week. They have, by the way, Sydney's run in the next like 2 months is so hard.
Well, they finished.
I don't
first.
Have it up, but they're versing like every good team.
Yeah,
like, seriously, they're going to be found out quickly if they're not good. Now,
I mean, Lewis Melican's Timmy. Their fullback.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no disrespect to Lewis Melican, but like, you've got, it's all good and well to move McCartan forward if you have an alternative. Like Kemp, right? Carlton moved Kemp forward. That's fine. You got Wietering back. It's not like Kemp was their key defender. You know? Like, that was a brave. It's a brave move from Dan Cox, because it leaves them liable at one end to a good key forward, but it also means the forwards that haven't stood up in big moments are now under even more pressure. You're saying, Cookie?
Yeah.
Jonas, what do you think about transition to a Sunday arvo, Western Sydney?
I think
McRae versus Kinsley. No, I want to know what you thought about the coaches, the heavyweight boxing fight.
Heavyweight.
Well, what happened? McRae saw Bedford give a bit of stick to Dacos when he was coming off. McRae told him to, I don't know, some choice words. But as soon as he sees the big boy Adam Kingsley, the brick shithouse, what does he do? He sits back down.
Train leg king as I dare ya.
Fly in name, fly in nature.
Not in Western Sydney, very dangerous place.
But see, he's a big boy. He's a big boy. I probably wouldn't F with Kingers.
As Victorians, we've got to watch our mouth on Western Sydney.
Do you think he should have been fined, McRae? He got off. No, he didn't get a fine. Should McRae have been fined $20,000 like Hinkley did? I think we got for the Gingivan antics.
What do you think, Cookie?
Could have been fined, but maybe not 20.
20,000 is a lot.
I don't even think Hinkley should have been fined.
Warnings are stupid. I do.
But
of course you do.
As a
whole, but only because I'm a Hawthorn supporter.
Yeah, see, I don't know what McRae said, first of all. I haven't watched the Hinkley clip in a while, so I haven't tried to lip read what he said. But Ginnivan messed up there. I know Hinkley shouldn't be the one to dish it back and be graceful in defeat.
Definitely agree.
But on the point of what Janus was going on about before, if that was Clarko, if that was the Scott brothers, if that was Goodwin, if that was Ross Lyon,
Bevo.
If that was Dimmer, if that was Bevo, if that was Ken Hinckley,
they're getting fined.
They're getting fined. Why is McRae no different? Like, why is he protected in that like space?
And coaches these days are coaching from the boundary a lot more than they used to, so there's going to be more of this, I guarantee it. Especially if Dacos gets tagged every week.
But they're...
I was going to start losing it.
Yeah,
Should it be allowed? Should the coaches, if they're coaching down on the boundary, should they be allowed to put a mark on the game?
They're not.
By maybe talking to other opposition? They probably shouldn't. They shouldn't be.
It's not a shouldn't. They're not supposed to.
Well, then he got off.
Yeah, like...
Very lenient from the AFL.
Or should they just suspend him to the box?
They did that to Clarko, didn't they?
Yeah.
After, remember last year when Jimmy Webster...
the slur. The
preseason game when Jimmy Webster smacked up...
Simkin.
He ran through Jai Simkin.
It's an understatement.
Clarko used some choice words. And the AFL, they said, you're on like a 2-year suspended sentence. Go up to the box.
A year?
I think so. I don't think he can't coach on the boundary. I don't think.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
All right. And if on the Nick Dacos, Jonas, what do you think of that one? The Bedford nullifying?
I think Nick Daicos, he fell victim to the Toby Bedford effect. He fell victim. Bedford, I thought, was very good because, especially in the first half, I mean, Daicos still racked up 17 touches or whatever. But the thing is, it's not the number that matters, it's the effectiveness. Because Bedford forced him laterally a lot. Laterally, I should say. Forced him laterally a lot.
They can
and he
still
forced
be
him
effective.
Backwards a lot. He forced him backwards. Daicos only had about 60 meters gained
the
first half.
The meters gained.
So I thought Bedford was really good. His pressure, his hunt on the ball, and Bedford sort of combined with a lot of the Giants' engine room and their half forward. They pressured the ball carrier so hard. But there was a whole period in the second quarter where Collingwood had no time. Darcy Jones was chasing them up. O'Halloran was chasing them up. Callahan was chasing them up. Toby Green was chasing them up. They had no time on the ball, and they had to rush their kicks. So in the third quarter, when Collingwood sort of dominating the inside 50s, I think it was about 17-4 or something, it didn't matter because all the defensive mids were pressuring, or the offensive mids were pressuring the ball carriers. The Giants had time to set up, and that's why Taylor was so instrumental. He took 9 intercept marks because the balls were getting rushed, and he can read the plays so well.
Jeez, Taylor was good. Taylor was really, really good.
He was a brick wall. How good was his like pack mark in the first quarter, coming through like 4 blokes?
Yeah.
Such a good mark. But he forced
hope
so much repeat entries.
Yeah, I agree.
He hasn't
hope
gotten an All-Australian, hasn't he?
No.
Purely off the fact that he doesn't play a full season.
I got a question on that. Who are better footballers? Lever, Aaliyah, or Wietering, and Taylor? Who are you taking?
As in pick one?
Who are you taking? Lever or Aaliyah or Wietering and Taylor? Like, who are they? Order them from 1 to 4. Cookie, order them 1 to 4. Who are you taking?
Am I taking Lever in his prime or Lever now? Because I think he was better 3 years ago.
Three years ago. So they're primes. Who are you taking?
I am taking. What do they have to do? No, that's too many questions.
Just play their role.
Look, I'm not going to. I'm going to take a lead last.
Yep.
I don't trust him.
He's never played well in a big game, I swear.
Exactly.
Oh, there was one final he played against Geelong where he kept marking the ball. That was like 2021.
Yeah, qualifying finals don't count.
So funny.
We kept kicking it to him.
I don't count qualifying finals as big games because they're not sudden death.
I'm probably going to go Wietering, Lever, Taylor, Aaliyah.
Yeah.
I think Jake Lever. People forget how good Jake Lever was. And Wietering, I trust Wietering. Like, he has pretty much single-handedly tried to defend 6 blokes the last 3 years. Done a pretty good job.
If anything happens to him, Carlton are done. Their season is over. Yeah. This is a big call. I don't think there is a player that is more important to a team than Wietering. Like, can you, Janus, can you think of anyone, or Cookie, can you think of a player that is more important to a team than Jacob Wietering is to Carlton? Like, there's not many like him. Because you go in the, like, you pick a midfielder. You can't really say a midfielder is because, like...
What about the Bont? If the Bont goes from the Dogs, what are they?
They got Libber and Richards.
Yeah. True.
Yes, the Bont's
as
close.
A backman, no.
Oh, yeah. No. As a backman.
Carlton's backline, so...
Yeah. The Carlton backline is under massive pressure this year. But...
Especially with someone like Silvani playing a sort of new defender role.
Yes, but, hopefully it's in the genes.
Yeah.
I'd love him to round bloody in the first 6 weeks be in like the All-Australian discussion. Jeez, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
I've got a feeling it could be a selection discussion though. Could be going back to the twos. Even though he's not going to play in the ones for a while. But
now, I want to bring up some unsung heroes. We love talking about them.
This is the first official voting.
Exactly. This is important. So just for those at home, we're going to keep a running record of each week. We're each going to bring an unsung hero to the table from the round of footy. And we're going to decide between ourselves 3, 2, and 1 votes. And at the end of the year, we'll have the unsung hero champion.
The Brownlow unsung hero sort of thing.
Exactly. Yes. Same voting as the Brownlow, though. 3, 2, 1 for each round. And it can't be like Janus, a superstar.
I want you to kick it off here.
Me?
Who's your unsung hero?
This guy very much, he impressed me a lot when I was watching the game. He popped up in big moments. He was involved in big moments. He got the ball when it mattered. I'm going with, from the Giants, I'm going with Xavier O'Halloran.
Bang, that is unsung.
That's the definition of unsung hero.
He was so good. He had 13 possessions. He had two goals. But a big note to make, 10 of them were contested. He had 10 contested possessions.
Disposals are different from possessions, Janus.
He put his head over the ball. He was involved in the play. There's two particular plays I want to make note of. There was one where the ball fell out the back of the pack. He was the first one onto it. He gives the ball to Darcy Jones. Darcy Jones takes two bounces and kicks a great, great check side goal. And there was another bit of old-fashioned footy. He bumps the shit out of Lipinski when the Pies are making their third quarter sort of run. He goes bang on Lipinski, gets him dropping the ball, and picks it up. So I thought he was very, very good.
What about you, T-Dub?
I've gone with a player on a losing side. This bloke is one of the most chronically underrated footballers in the AFL. Darcy Cameron from Collingwood. He was phenomenal. He was really good. I know he wasn't up against Briggs, but still. 37 hitouts, 22 touches, and 19 contested possessions. That's a bloody good effort for a ruckman in the modern day.
He's pretty underrated, actually.
That's a very good...
He doesn't get enough, does he?
No, he definitely does not get his flowers. But
he hasn't come from much. Like, I remember when he came to the league, like, people had massive doubts. Now look at him.
He's playing very well. He's a premiership
ruckman. He's one of Collingwood's most consistent players.
Yeah. He
especially last year.
But even still, he was so reliable. He's definitely underrated. Like, still. It's like guys like... I'm trying to think of a comparison. Like, someone like Shane Edwards from Richmond. He played 300 games and was a gun, but he was always underrated. Like, I feel like he never, ever truly got his flowers. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. He always kicked two, I swear.
Yeah.
He's like a Dylan Moore, but for 300 games.
Yes. What about you, Cookie? Who's your unsung hero?
Performed. Mine, you said this bloke was going to play well before the game. You would think he's unsung, but he has had some praise in the media because he shut down one of the most dangerous players in the AFL, Wiz. So I'm giving my unsung hero to Sammy Wicks. Now,
Jeezy was good.
And Dean Cox as well. Because shout out Dean Cox because he moved him back. He said to us he's going to play back. But he played well. Wiz literally didn't get near it.
Yeah, he didn't have a kick.
Wore him like an absolute glove. Wiz is like
almost a barometer. It's not his fault the bloke's lost. Like, he shut down the barometer. If the Wiz is playing well, it's bloody hard to beat Hawthorn.
Yeah.
And he did very well, especially in the wet where the Wiz loves just like getting frees and stuff where he just got him holding the ball like 3 times. Really, I think he kind of changed it a little bit. Like when Hawthorn were up and about, he caught the Wiz a few times and then this one's kicked a couple. So yeah, Sammy Wicks, Well done.
And just on Sammy Wicks, you can tell he's played well on his direct opponent. When he got the Wizards trying to play for free kicks, that's how you know you got them.
The Wizard always tries to play for free kicks.
Exactly.
But to be fair, if I was 4 foot, I would also try and play for free kicks. He's not a big dude. The Wiz is so small. He's a little midget.
Actually, that's what I was thinking. Is the Wiz taller than Jagger Smith?
Because
I swear Jagger Smith looks tiny.
Nick Watson is 170 centimetres. Has he got you covered, Janus?
Oh, Jack.
I think he's got me covered.
That's... Jagger Smith, 6 foot.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I thought Jagger Smith was like...
Nah, he's just
small.
Light. He's like 75 kilos.
I think he's got me covered there too.
All right, so who are we giving the 3-2-1s?
I reckon Wicks is the three.
Yeah.
He wore him like a glove. Like, the Wizard...
He did.
The thing is, you got to appreciate small defenders because they never, ever get appreciated, I feel. He wore him like a glove. Sure. Like, the Wiz literally did nothing. And the play in the last quarter when he tackled someone, got up, and then laid another massive tackle on Sicily. I think he tackled Watson, then got up and tackled Sicily, and Sicily just dropped the ball. Like, he was... I've got no idea what his stat line was. I'm open to further discussion, but my order would probably be Wicks, O'Halloran, Cameron.
I think I agree with that. O'Halloran, the winning side, played well.
Yeah. Kicked 2 goals.
He was involved. He kicked 2 goals and he was involved and he set up a lot. He was involved in passages.
All right. That's our 3-2-1.
I'm
Wicks,
happy with that.
O'Halloran and Cameron.
Yes. Let us know your unsung hero in the comments of our various social media platforms.
Social medias.
Yes.
Now, we've had some other news, not footy related. Sir Stephen Smith has hung up the boots from ODI Test Cricket. ODI Cricket, not ODI Test Cricket.
Stephen Peter Devereaux Smith.
Exactly. Now, if I had to pick a smudge memory just personally from ODI cricket, the one that comes to mind straight away is when he hit the winning runs.
Yeah.
What was it, the 2015 World Cup?
Yep.
I remember that.
Big moment.
And he wasn't old there, was he? That was the beginning of a bit of a leader in smudge.
Yeah, he was...
He 105 off 93.
That game?
Not in the final.
Yeah.
He didn't make 100 in the final.
Not in the final. Not in the final. Or maybe he did. No.
No, he didn't. Clark made 70.
No, they were chasing.
Oh, no, wrong one, sorry.
I know
when did you make 100, Janus? Tell us.
It went out.
Bring it up here. No, you keep going, sorry.
Smudge is a legend, though. He really, really is just like...
He is.
It's unfortunate that what happened with the obvious, but...
Yep.
I mean, he will go down as make a basketball reference, he will go down in my starting five all-time favourite.
Phenomenal
sportsman ever across of the 35 teams that I follow. He is a walk-up starting five. Right. Like to watch, I watched, I reckon, every ball of his innings in the 2019 Ashes. Like it just hits different, man. Just watching him make 140 in the second innings at Edgbaston, I was basically in tears. I was like, you are my hero, Stephen Smith. To go through what you went through when Look, up to interpretation whether you believe he was properly in the wrong. He let it go, the ball tampering, but he took one. He's like, I'm the captain, it's my fault. And he's come back and just gone, like, it.
Bang.
It's bang. I know he's still playing test cricket, which is great, but love Smudge. Good ode to Smudge there.
Now, little quick fact with his ODI career, one of the most interesting ones I could find, kind of. The amount of balls that he faced in every innings amounted to 6,669.
Oh,
so there we go.
What does Giannis say? I like that number.
I like
69.
Average
like
of 43, 1,200s. Great career. I think he had about 8 most catches ever. ODI cricketers for Australia.
Yeah. Sounds about right.
Yep.
Yep. Well done, Smudge.
Shout out, Smudge.
Well done. Well done. You're a good man. Now, we've analysed the behemoth out of the last opening round, which probably won't ever return, thank goodness. But now it's time to move forward. So I guess, obviously, there's 9 games. We're not going to preview all of them. So we're just going to go give a couple of big watches for you guys to keep an eye on throughout the weekend. So, Janus, what is one of your just what's something to look for? What can the fans look for? What's like a player or a storyline or a something that could just be big this week?
All right, I have gone we have 2 each, right?
Yeah, just a couple each.
All right, my first one, I've gone with the Geelong Freo game.
Yep.
And I want a watch to be how Geelong will ruck against Jackson. Probably for the last couple years, especially last year, the ruck was an issue that Geelong had. Sam De Koning's trained all preseason as a ruck. How will they do it? Will they use Stanley to give him a chop out? Will De Koning be the primary ruck? How's he going to go up against Jackson? That's something I'm very interested to see, because Jackson, when he's on, geez, he's damaging. He's good in the ruck and he can go forward as well. So, yeah, I want to see how Geelong go up against Jackson in the ruck and how like that will translate to the midfield as well.
Yep. That's a good shout. Cookie?
What's your other one?
Yeah.
Other one?
Yeah, Janus, go yellow on you.
All right, and the other one I had, it's a game up in Adelaide. It is Adelaide. Adelaide taking on the Saints.
Yep.
And I just want to see, I want Adelaide to have a statement win over the Saints. I just want to see them.
Run to bed.
Obviously, last week I said I've got Adelaide bolting up. I want to see if they mean business. I want to see them thump the Saints.
These are the wins you got to bank. If you lose exactly these ones, it gets very tough.
They're cherry ripe.
It's at home as well.
Saints are cherry ripe. It's home as well.
I want to see the three-headed monster go to town on the Saints back line.
A 145-point win over St Kilda, just like the Hawks did that one time.
Back in 2014. Bang.
Jalen Baker's kick 6. Anyway, back to topic.
Yep.
He might have not kicked 6, by the way. But anyway, I like to think that he did. My watch, the last game of the round, the Eagles versus the Suns.
Yep.
If the Suns are fair dinkum, they'll win this game by 6 goals, at least. And if they don't, like, just, yeah, these are the wins. Remember last year? Last year, they just couldn't get an away win, right? They could never win away. It was the Mac Andrew win that, like, broke the deadlock, I think.
And that was only that
and that gets, was really excited. But anyway.
That made me so happy. That was a good win.
They have to bank these away wins.
That got me up and about.
But if you can't beat the Eagles in Perth, yeah, it's just that these are the ones Gold Coast have to get. They've probably got an easy fixture from the AFL. Love child. So.
And it, look, and it has to show, it has to show us that they have addressed their away form last year.
Yeah, exactly.
I just have
to win.
They
lost to the Eagles last year as well. They have to win.
They have to win. They can't muck around. They can't play two and a half quarters and they have to win. All right, my next one. This Pies versus Port game is just looking at me dead in the face, and it's looking at me. Oh, this is Saturday night of the
Houston
G.
Cup.
Exactly, but if Collingwood
Joe
lose,
Richards as well,
the Joe Richards Cup. Yeah. He played good in the preseason game.
Joe Richards Cup.
That's great.
If there's anyone who's an unsung hero, his name's Joey Richards. So look out for him.
Yeah.
I want to see how the Pies respond. They can't be cramping
as well.
They can't be cramping again. They can't shit the bed like they did against the Giants. I don't know what Port are going to bring, but...
Not much.
I don't expect that much from Port. I don't expect much. But they have to bank this win. What about you, Tito?
I reckon there's going to be a boil over under the roof. I reckon North are going to beat the Dogs.
Well, here we go.
I reckon Bontempelli going out will just shake up their midfield. And I reckon I've just got a funny feeling North could just... There's always an upset in round one. Now, my heart's saying Richmond are going to beat Carlton, but that's just me being pessimistic. But I think...
Can't happen.
I think North can beat the Dogs. I just think that could be a big, big upset. Like, we will open the show if North beat the Dogs. Like, that's how big the upset would be if that took place.
100%. Be three North players as an unsung heroes.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But
I think North have been building.
Well, I just think it's time for them to actually play some proper football.
I don't think that's a particularly shocking take, because I think they've been building very much for the last 2 years. They've topped up. The Caleb Daniel Cup, by the way. Caleb Daniel Cup.
Bang. There we go.
Darling, Parker.
It'll be interesting to see how he goes.
Come in.
Darling, Parker, sure. Daniel. Like,
you're telling
you know,
me
Sheasel's Sheasel.
Not going to have 50 off halfback?
Tristan Sherry as well. That'll be a good battle. Sherry and English.
Sherry English. No Bontempelli.
English needs a good year.
Like, no Bontempelli. I think that's a boil over waiting to happen. And my other one.
Who's guarding Darcy just quietly?
Who's
going to stop him?
Combin.
Yeah.
Or did he finish the? Did he finish the year? No, he finished the year back. And moved him back, didn't they?
Is he? Yeah,
they did.
Is he
started,
injured?
Or no. He started playing well back.
Coleman Jones is injured. That's who's injured.
Combin. That's
like, do they put Aiden Corr on Sam Darcy? Because I don't.
No.
Oh, Aiden Corr as well.
I think Aiden Corr gets put on Sam Darcy, Sam Darcy's licking his lips.
Yeah, but then who does Corr?
He's gonna
play
make the. He's gonna make the lid. Like the
yeah,
roof.
Corr plays
he's
on Norton.
Combin around.
Plays on Darcy.
100%. Right, your other one.
So I'm gonna continue on from your prediction on the D's last week. I reckon Petrarca and Oliver are going to combine for 60 disposals and 3 goals. And they're playing the Giants. You've only got one of Toby Bedford.
That would be a big win.
I didn't say Melbourne are going to win. I just think...
The Toby Bedford Cup as well.
Bang.
Here we go.
I just think Petrarca and Oliver looked so good in the preseason game, and they look so fit and ready. I reckon they're going to combine for 60. Either 30 each or 35 and 25 or 40 and 20 or 50 and 10. They'll combine for 60 and have 3 goals each. Oh, not 3 goals each, 3 goals combined. So that's my bold predictions.
Jesse Hogan playing?
Jesse Hogan. Nah, he's still got broken
Jesse thumb. Hogan. Yeah.
They break his thumb, yeah.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how they go, especially, like, they obviously looked really good in the preseason game. But obviously, amidst all that media speculation from last year, they'll have a point to prove this year.
Oh, yeah. It's on the G, too.
So,
it's on the G, 100%. Sunday afternoon footy. That's game on.
Are the ski slopes open?
No, not yet.
It's too hot. Yeah, not too hot for skiing.
Too hot, Jonas.
Yeah, so if you're a Melbourne fan, go down. Go down.
Get down to the G.
Get out of those tour up mansions. Get down to the G.
Scan that card in and walk through.
That's it.
Show your support to the boys.
That's a great.
I don't think you want them there.
It's a great call. No, we only want them there so that when they lose, we can laugh at them.
Yeah. And don't forget your charcuterie boards. It's amazing.
Yes. Lazy Susans. Anyway, boys, it's been another great show. Thank you, everyone, so much for tuning in. Hope your team wins. Do the Cats beat the Dockers, Janus?
I'll say yes by 7 points.
Do the Hawks beat the Bombers on Friday night?
I really hope so. You're going to see a dark version of me. I'm saying Hawks by 32.
Well, bang. And ooh. I will...
Oh, geez.
I will back the Blues,
the Blues
in.
And how much of the Blues are winning by? What's the margin?
See, the line is actually...
Is it 160 or 10?
Nah, Kerno's not playing. It might only be 80. No, I'm kidding. I reckon... Blues will win like 22 points or something. They won't play. They won't be mature enough to fully put them away. They'll win by a couple of goals. Anyway,
okay.
Adios.
Okay.
Thank you all so much for listening.